Hey, dude. Pull up KSL Classifieds. See how much it is to rent a room in Salt Lake City right now.
Alrighty. Pulling it up now. KSL Classifieds. Oh, okay. Looks like it's around 800 to $1,000 if you want to have a real bedroom in Salt Lake City. Not one of those Harry Potter sleeping under the stairs situations.
You can pay $600 if you're okay with what this listing calls a very small room with no closet. You have long arms, Sean. Pretty sure you could touch both walls in that room. And again, it's a single room. You'd be sharing the house with roommates.
Home prices aren't much better. According to Zillow, the average Utah home will set you back a casual $510,000.
Cool. But according to our good pals in the Bay Area, Utah is dirt cheap.
When I think of Utah, you know, I think it's just low cost of living. It's just being able to buy more land, I guess, for like a lower price, for sure.
There's just a lot more room there, and it's a very rural state from what I've heard. So it's a little less urban living, and there's a lot more space, a lot more land. You can get big property there. You can do that in California, but it's a little harder. I would say I envision like a big piece of land with like horses running around and like a very clear sky.
I've heard stories about, you know, with the tech nomads. They can basically live anywhere. So I've heard stories of people that Utah is one of the places that they move to.
I do know someone who lives there, a dear friend from high school who moved there from California, and she loves it. Has a great lifestyle and the outdoor access, quality of life, great people she's met, just people kind of from all over she's finding.
We've actually, like me and my partner, have actually considered moving, like scanning the general area, Salt Lake. That plan didn't work out, but there was definitely a desire to leave California because taxes, cost of rent, just overall, I guess, like satisfaction.
Okay, but have you looked at housing prices in the Bay Area?
Well, no, because I know I couldn't afford even a Harry Potter closet room in San Francisco. I'm not trying to make myself feel bad this early in the week, but I get your point. Compared to California, Utah is cheaper.
But is Utah affordable for Utahns? I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. This week on State Street, we're tackling the beast that is Utah's housing market.
So to understand Utah's housing market now, let's take a look back at where it's been.
Turns out, housing affordability isn't a new topic in Utah. Here's Planet Money host Robert Smith, a former KUER reporter, in 1994 talking about it.
Margot Wesley moved to Salt Lake City from Hawaii to find housing. A single mother with two children, she was being priced out of homes and apartments on Hawaii, and she was convinced that Salt Lake City was affordable.
Yeah, I heard you couldn't give apartments away or rentals away. I mean, they were giving microwaves and all kinds of incentives to get you to rent their apartment because there was such an abundance of availability.
That was 3 years ago. What Wesley found here was a housing crunch that put Hawaii to shame. A disability guaranteed her a coupon that subsidized her housing.
But it was like having a coupon that nobody wanted to take because there were so many people trying to get the same apartment. I mean, this one place I went to, there was four of us standing in the front room saying, "Here's my money, here's my money." And, you know, she said she'd had 60 calls in one day. It was an overload of, you know, it kind of just did a flip-flop. Now there's all these people trying to find very limited housing instead of very much housing and limited people trying to find it. It really had done a major flip-flop.
So Wesley and her two sons lived in a house that was eventually condemned. Though she now rents part of a simple home in Central City, her rent is going up again, and she's not really sure what to do.
I think these days you definitely have to be a two-income family to be able to pay the rising cost and to make life a little bit more comfortable and safe.
That was former KUER reporter Robert Smith in 1994. Back then, a two-bed, two-bath apartment would cost you around $559 a month. The average individual income was around $23,000 a year.
According to economists, people should be spending around 30% of their income on housing. In 1994, that average price for an apartment was pretty much in line with that. So while some people had trouble finding housing, like the woman Robert spoke with, things have only gotten worse, and wages haven't kept up.
In Utah's six biggest counties today, nearly half of renters are cost-burdened, which means they're paying more than that recommended amount.
But people want to live here. That's just the truth. As our friends in California put it, the state is beautiful. I mean, it's fall. The leaves are turning. Snow-capped mountains are in our future. Could you ask for more?
But beauty doesn't pay the rent, Sage. It's not easy finding a place to live. And the vast majority of renters are completely priced out of homeownership.
Can't blame them. I don't know many people with a spare $500,000.
But there are young people out there that have gotten creative. Sophie Harlem is in her 20s and works a tech job in Utah County. She actually bought a house with her brother in 2021 after a few years of bad experiences in Utah's rental market.
And that's not a unique story. Many young people now are only able to afford homeownership with family help.
We met Sophie at her house in Mill Creek. It's this cute three-bedroom that was built in the 50s and has the most amazing vegetable garden in the back. She told me about the moment she realized renting just wasn't for her anymore.
It was really hard to find affordable places that I felt happy and safe living in. One of the places that I lived was right off of State Street, kind of in the Liberty Park area. And we landed there just because it was a good location that had easy access to places that we wanted to go. And it was affordable in terms of something that I was willing to pay every month. We had a lot of people walking by the house at late times of the night. My dog is someone who, or is a dog who gets anxious around strangers. And so he would be barking constantly or just anxious. I would get really frustrated with the sirens that I heard on State Street or even right in front of my house all during the hours of the night. And so I don't think there was one clear moment, but it was just so much buildup where I was really frustrated over not being able to have like a quiet, safe space to be at, especially during COVID where you couldn't really get out as much. And the other thing was just like that house was really old. There were rats running around the streets and by our house. There were mice that would kind of sneak into the house sometimes. And our landlord was really nice, but he wasn't necessarily always attentive to address things right away. And so every time something like that happened, I would think to myself, hey, if I owned a house, I would be able to do things for myself, or I wouldn't have someone else to blame. It would be on me. And that made me feel a little bit better.
As I understand it, you co-bought this place with your brother, or both of your brothers?
One of my brothers. Yes, that's correct.
Tell me how that came about.
Younger in life, it's hard to be able to prepare to pay for, you know, I've had to replace my furnace and my AC and these really big ticket items. And so before even buying the house, I knew that that was a possibility of big expenses that would be unpredictable. And that gave me stress over buying a house on my own. And so when I was joking around with my brothers, one of them was like, hey, I'd love to buy a house with you too. It's a great investment. And then you get the same benefit of a little bit of ease in terms of those unexpected costs that come along with owning a house.
Without that extra help from your family, do you think you could have done it by yourself?
My mortgage payments would be a whole lot higher because I wouldn't have been able to put down as much on as a down payment. My house is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. So it's not anything extravagant, but if I were to buy, it probably would have had to be something much smaller or a condo. But again, with my dog, the whole reason why I wanted a house so badly was to be able to have a backyard where my dog could roam around in and be in a safe residential area where I felt safe in too.
I want to go back to when you were looking at houses. COVID was an insane time for the real estate market, the rental market, as well as you said. Home prices were seeing increases that have not really been seen ever in Utah history. What was going through your mind when you saw what was happening to these home prices and you were going to make this monumental financial decision in your life?
I had a lot of anxiety around the time that I was buying the house because it felt like I needed to do it as soon as possible because the prices just kept going up every month. So it felt like I needed to do it at the time or it would, you know, get too far out of control for me to feel comfortable doing it. And at the time, we were looking at houses that had 20, 30 offers in on, and some of those offers were 10% to, you know, 25% higher than asking price. And so you didn't really know exactly what you needed to do to get a house that you really liked.
Do you have roommates? Tell me how you cover your monthly expenses here.
So for the first year and a half, there were three people living in the house. I have always occupied one of the bedrooms and I pay, you know, the expected rent that I would like to receive from that one bedroom. And then I had two friends who lived in the house with me who both paid the same amount in rent. Over time, I had my boyfriend move in with us and one of the roommates moved out. So there were still three people in the house.
You work in Utah County, but you, I mean, obviously everyone was working at home during COVID, but kind of looking long term, why not look at a place in Utah County in Saratoga Springs or Lehigh area that might be a little bit more affordable, but a little bit closer to work?
So one of the reasons why I moved to Utah in the first place is I'm just a big lover of the outdoors. I love to ski. I love to hike, especially again with my dog Murphy. And so easy access to the outdoors is a huge part of living in Utah for me. So now I do commute into work 4 days a week, and it's a pretty long drive, but I'm still happy living up in Salt Lake City, both for the outdoors and easy access to the Cottonwood Canyons. You know, I'm in Mill Creek, so I sometimes go up Mill Creek Canyon before work. And then also just the culture, definitely, where I like the culture of Salt Lake City, being able to get downtown, being able to go to a bar with friends, which is maybe not such a possibility down in Provo where I work.
If you were in the position you were in 2 years ago now, where you were looking to buy a house, given the market how it is now, do you think buying a place would be possible for you?
That's a good question. It's hard to know. I think a lot less people are thinking about buying now. And so maybe that should be an indication to me that maybe I wouldn't have bought at this time around.
What kinds of conversations are you having with your friends and coworkers about buying houses?
Conversations now, I think, are just slower. Like, those who own a house are, you know, just talking about maintaining. I haven't heard many people considering selling. I think the friends who are still in the rental market right now are not necessarily wanting to buy. Those who are still in the rental market that probably didn't buy during the COVID years and when things were booming are maybe grateful that they didn't buy. I think they, at the time, if they didn't feel that pressure to like get in on the market and benefit from it, now they're back looking and saying, you know, maybe buying a house isn't worth all of the stress or worth all of the maintenance and the long-term market fluctuation. I don't think I have many friends who are looking to buy right now.
Sophie, thank you so much.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you.
That was Sophie Harlem, a young homeowner in Mill Creek.
We're going to take a quick break. When we're back, where is the Utah housing market headed? And what can people do to better position themselves in the market right now?
You're listening to State Street.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion about the biggest political headlines in the Beehive State. Find new episodes of PBS Utah's The Hinckley Report every Friday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. So, Sophie made homeownership work, but not without a few hacks.
You just can't buy a home like you used to anymore, Sean.
In Sophie's case, she went in on a house with her brother. She needed another person to help her enter the land of homeownership.
Savvy lady. She also has roommates that chip in on the mortgage and pay other expenses each month.
But owning a home was important to her, so she made it work.
entering home ownership in less traditional ways might be the new norm. James Wood is a senior fellow at the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute. He put it like this.
For most, anyway, they can't graduate from college and get into home ownership. They're going to have a job for a few years and probably a second income in the household in order to get into the housing market, into home ownership.
And that makes sense, because according to the latest report from the Institute, Utah is now the seventh most expensive state to live in the country. California is number two.
To help us dive a little bit deeper, I spoke with Andra Gent. She's a finance professor at the University of Utah. Her niche, though, is the economics of housing. And she got into that California-Utah comparison.
So certainly our house prices are cheaper than California, no question. There's still, you know, $575,000 is kind of the, I think, somewhere around the state median or certainly Salt Lake County. It's very difficult to find anything for owner occupancy below $400,000. So yes, that's a lot cheaper than California. However, we also have much lower incomes than California. And so when you think about can a family, if they want to become owners, how easily can they afford it? I'm not sure it's much cheaper for a Utah family when you consider their incomes relative to a California family.
Gotcha. And people always point to the COVID-19 pandemic as the reason for all the craziness in the housing market in the last 3 or 4 years. In your experience looking at all this data, is it just the pandemic or was it a combination of all these other factors that combined that got us to where we are right now?
Yeah, so definitely the pandemic accelerated it. We've had a long-term decline in affordability. If you measure it as, you know, the standard way we look at affordability is sort of share of households that are cost burdened. So somebody who's spending typically more than 30% of their income on their rent or housing costs. Rent is a little bit easier to wrap your head around because it's not as affected by interest rates, right? So one of the things that creates volatility in house prices that doesn't create quite as much volatility in rents is interest rates. So, but long term, we've had this, even prior to the pandemic, this rise in the share of U.S. households, including Utahns, that are spending more than 30% of their income on housing costs. And in a place like Utah, where we're sort of sandwiched between two mountain ranges, it's hard even longer term to increase our housing supply unless you go out quite far from city centers. The other thing, Sean, that we've seen is there's been more pressure on suburban home prices than kind of the centrally located land. And what's going on is, like, if you only have to commute to work 2 or 3 days a week, you're willing to live much further away, right, than when you had to commute 4 or 5 days a week. And so both of these things have turbocharged our affordability challenges. But we are still in a very supply-constrained environment in Utah, and that's not going to change, right? The mountains are going to stay there. Great Salt Lake's going to stay there. Utah Lake's going to stay there. We just have natural supply constraints.
Mm-hmm. A recent report from Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute stated that the American dream of owning a home in Utah is fading fast. Can you point to one reason why that is? Is it the pandemic? Is it all these things coming together?
Yeah, I mean, the singular reason is that so much of our land is zoned only for single-family housing. And that means that we physically can't build starter homes. If starter homes now, you know, we're at the border where, you know, now the sort of urban boundary for the Salt Lake Metro is Grantsville, right? And so we're talking an hour commute for a lot of people. And that's really where there's vacant land. We just don't have vacant land. So it's sort of a combination of the pandemic, us reaching our natural physical borders of development. And then again, we can't do a lot of infill and sort of, you know, we don't build 1500 to 2000 square foot homes because the land isn't adequately zoned for it. We don't build large quantities of townhomes. And I think the single reason is, it's sort of a combination of our natural supply constraints and the fact that we've allowed so much of our land to be zoned only for large homes on a single plot of land.
Mm-hmm. And it's anticipated the average home in Utah, I think you mentioned, will cost $500,000 or more next year. How are new home buyers even affording a home? What's the secret sauce? And I think that everybody's kind of grown up like, hey, you get a good job, you get a college degree in a few years, you're going to be owning your first home. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
How are people getting into first homes now?
Yeah, so one shift we've seen is we are seeing people delay home ownership. And so we're seeing a big increase in single family rentals. So I think 20 years ago, people thought, you know, if you thought of rental housing, people thought of apartments. What we're seeing is there's actually a lot of households that make six figures that are renting. And they're renting single-family homes in these single-family rental communities. So we are seeing a shift, particularly with where interest rates are right now. Some developers are doing buy-downs of rates. So interest rates are obviously another big barrier for first-time home buyers. But yeah, there's a lot of households that are not going to be able to own a single-family home, you know, a 2,500-square-foot home. That's just not going to be feasible for a number of years, certainly not until interest rates come back down.
And what needs to change to make home ownership more attainable for the majority of renters? Is it just a factor of the interest rates coming back down to what they were 18 months, 24 months ago, or is it something else?
That's going to be part of the story. The bigger story, I think we have to reimagine home ownership as not necessarily such a big home on a large lot. So, you know, we have three times as much space per person in housing now than we did in 1950. So we have both smaller family sizes, and yet our homes have grown almost threefold. And so we might need to start thinking, well, maybe can you have small lot sizes? Can cities allow lot sizes of 2,000 square feet or 3,000 square feet instead of a minimum lot size of 5,000 square feet?
What would you say to a young person who is in a situation either through the constraints of where their job is located, where their rent might be 50% of their take-home pay? What would you say to them if they want to get out of that rental market and get into more of an ownership situation? What steps would they need to take?
You're going to have to tighten your belt to save up for the down payment, and probably until interest rates come down, you just fundamentally need higher income to qualify for mortgages because, again, that mortgage payment to income ratio is really going to matter. Now, if you make a larger down payment, if you can get up to a 30% down payment, obviously that's going to reduce your monthly payment to income. But renting, there's a lot of good options to rent out there. And the good news, Sean, on the affordability issue in Utah is things are going to get a lot better for renters in the next 18 months. We're seeing a ton of supply coming online. Salt Lake County is projected to add about 11,000 units. We're now up to a 5.2% vacancy in our multifamily market. And so that's really good news, actually, for renters. It's not such great news for developers. The caveat being that a lot of that is not family-sized housing. A lot of that is going to be studio and one bedrooms. And so for a family, that's a little bit more challenging.
Mm-hmm. That goes nicely into my next question of renting versus buying and how are those markets different? You mentioned single family rentals. Have I really kind of gone through this phase where it's kind of a big portion of the market for people? And then you do have the one bedroom, two bedroom apartments, the studios. Kind of looking at them broadly, how are the rental and home buying markets different? I know a lot of was talked in, I think it was 2021, the price of rentals went up, I think, by over like 20%, which was kind of unprecedented. I think a lot of that goes to that pandemic aspect again. But you say now that the rental market is actually looking up and up.
Yeah, it's great news. Developers saw rents going up, as you mentioned, by 20%. And they said, let's build some rental housing. And supply works. It brings rents back down. We may have got a little heavy on the studio, not even two bedrooms. I mean, we're just seeing a ton of supply in the studio and one bedrooms, particularly in Salt Lake City. I think out in our more suburban communities, we are seeing more single family rentals, and those I don't think are going to come down.
I think for a family that's renting and like struggling to pay for rent or find somewhere that's acceptable for them to live, this can kind of be like, what can they take away from this conversation? What can a family, say a family of four who's really kind of in between a rock and a hard place as far as housing, what can they take away from what you're saying?
It's a great question, and I wish I could say that our affordability challenges are going to be solved in the next year or 2 years, and they're not. Even if we could get zoning reform, it's going to be slow to add construction. Even if I could get my dream zoning reform passed, we're not going to see much housing supply come online in the family segment for 2-3 years. I would say, look seriously at your financial portfolio. Is there, you know, can you find a rental unit you're happy in and is stable, access to all the amenities you want, and can you make sure you are continuing to invest in these other assets and preferably a diversified portfolio? I'm sorry I can't give a more optimistic message about our housing market, but we do face a lot of uphill challenges here.
That was Andra Gent, a finance professor at the University of Utah who specializes in housing economics.
So yes, it is cheaper to live in Utah than it is in California.
But on average, Utahns make less money, too. And housing costs aren't projected to go down in the near future. At least, not by much.
For renters, though, more stock is coming online, which is expected to drive down the cost of rent for some people.
It depends on your location and what your priorities are. Are you a single person or a young couple without kids? A studio or one-bedroom place might be perfect for you. But if you're a family of four looking to rent a single-family home, things are less encouraging.
Same goes for those looking to buy. Lots of townhomes and condos are springing up across the state. If that fits your lifestyle, great. If you need more space, you might not be so lucky.
The legislature also passed a first-time homebuyer assistance program last session. That helps people with their initial down payment. But as always, there's a catch. Or a few.
To qualify, applicants must bid on a home that is a new build or has never been lived in. The price tag can also not exceed $450,000. Take Ivory Homes, for example. That's one of the largest home builders in the state. In its current new build inventory, only three homes would qualify, and they're townhomes, not single family.
In other words, options that fit the bill are limited right now. Like, really limited. And as Gent put it, more people will bid on those homes, driving up the cost and therefore pushing more people out.
The latest report from the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute calls rising house prices one of the greatest risks for Utah's economy. The good news? Housing affordability is something almost every local and state leader is concerned about.
City councils are talking about it. Mayors are vocal about it. And it's one of the governor's favorite things to talk about. Leaders across the state are looking at different affordability options, whether that's bolstering first-time homebuyer programs or incentivizing developers to build non-market rate housing.
Because as we learned last episode, Utah is family-centric. And that means parents and grandparents want their kids to be able to stay in Utah and not be priced out. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. The show's executive producer is Caroline Ballard. Editing and production support comes from David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark.
Our digital team includes Jim Hill, Eleanor Gomberg, and Raquel Davis. A special thanks to Bijan Siavoshi, who gathered audio for us in California.
State Street is a production of KUER. Just can't get enough of the show? Sign up for our newsletter for behind-the-scenes content. And we'd love to hear what you think. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. But beauty doesn't pay the rent, Sage. It's not easy finding a place to... Okay, let's try that one again. She's laughing too much.
I didn't see that was in there. That's funny.
From KUER.